Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Vincent Hughes, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Hughes at any point this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad if you have a question for Senator Hughes. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Vincent Hughes.
Thanks, Hugh. And thanks to everybody, and especially all my constituents, for participating on tonight's call. As always, some of the best feedbacks and ideas I receive come directly from my constituents. I've got the best constituents, except for the one that just coughed in the background. I've got some of the best constituents in the state of Pennsylvania. I am State Senator Vincent Hughes. We're holding this live telephone town hall where we will be discussing Governor Wolf's budget address, education funding, jobs, raising the minimum wage, criminal justice reform, anything that you may want to talk about is open for the next hour for us to raise up and discuss. This format will allow you to listen in, offer your opinion, and ask a question from the comfort of your home. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press star 3 on your phone. So if you have a question, press star 3 on your phone. Hugh?
Better? I think.
Go ahead.
We have a couple minutes while folks are still joining us. So I just want to reintroduce that if you have a question, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. But we do have a submitted question, or would you prefer going through just a brief summary of what transpired in Harrisburg this week?
Why don't we talk a little bit about, because we did have an important week in Harrisburg mm-hmm. Wednesday, yesterday, with the governor's budget address. There are some highlights that we need to pay attention to. We want to make sure that everybody has some unfiltered access to some of the data that was revealed in this governor's budget, in the governor's budget address, and of course in some of the budget material that's been distributed since the governor's budget proposal, which he unveiled at about 11 a.m. Yesterday, Tuesday, in Harrisburg. And real simple, I think everybody would say that the governor's budget address and its budget proposal for 2019 to 2020 builds upon the progress that he's made in the last 4 years, the first 4 years of his administration. This is now the first year of his second term, year number 5. It builds on the progress. It is a modest, but I think a budget that can be dealt with in a timely fashion, and I think moves the needle forward on a number of issues that have historically been concerns for the constituents of the Senate 7th Senatorial District, and in fact those of the entire state. There is another couple hundred million dollars that he is proposing to add into our education funding, which is positive. I think we would probably like to have seen a much more robust increase in public education funding, but at least he did not leave it flat funded. I think, as I said, we would probably like to see much more in that space, but there's new dollars there. He has worked in the space that we have been aggressively advocating for around free and affordable college, which, as I think everyone knows on this call, college education is becoming much more difficult to attain because the costs are so exorbitant, and so many students are graduating. In fact, in Pennsylvania, the average debt for students is about $36,000 in debt when they graduate from college in Pennsylvania. He put money in his budget proposal to pay for those students who graduate from community college, and remain in Pennsylvania. And he created a new program for veterans for them to take some of the burden off of getting their education through a what he's calling a GI Bill for Pennsylvania veterans. So in our march towards free and affordable college, he has begun this year's conversation in that march with investments in those spaces. Modest, but still going in the right direction. Another major issue that we have been historically very, very supportive of is calling for an increase in the minimum wage. Governor Wolf proposed that we go to $15 an hour and that we immediately jump to $12 an hour and then gradually go up to $15 an hour by, I believe it's 2025.
Yeah, that's right.
I have that correctly. The other substantive thing in the minimum wage increase proposal is his desire to go to eliminate the tip wage. And as most folks should know the fact that most of the wait staff that take care of us at our various restaurants and other locations, those individuals are not paid minimum wage. They're paid a tip wage, which is $2.83 an hour. Folks should know that that has not been increased since 1996. So we're talking about 23 years. There's not been an increase in the tip wage. And I think that whole differentiation between the tip wage and the regular minimum wage needs to come to an end. And those, so the governor's proposing that we bring everyone up on this path to $15 an hour, and after we get to $15 an hour, a cost of living adjustment would automatically go into effect for all low-income workers across Pennsylvania. We've had a history in this space. Pennsylvania led the state, led the nation, in fact, when we raised the minimum wage in 2006, and the federal government raised the wage for all workers across the country in 2009, but Pennsylvania led the way in 2006. Since 2006, there's not been an increase in Pennsylvania or nationally. That's a good 10 years with no increase in Pennsylvania. The problem that we have is that all of the states around Pennsylvania, Ohio, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, and New York, all have raised their minimum wage. And I think most folks have seen recent press accounts that the state of New Jersey is aggressively going down the path of raising the minimum wage towards $15 an hour. Very aggressive, lots of public conversation, which we here get the benefit to hear about because of our proximity to New Jersey. So the governor's proposed $15 an hour by 2025 and eliminating the tip scale. That will add about $119 or $120 million to the state budget because of the new revenues that will come in because folks are getting paid a higher level. Folks need to understand this, and I'll move on to the next point after I say this, that at the current minimum wage, we're basically mandating that folks work under the federal poverty level. So that cannot be the note, the tone, or the tenor of the people of the state of Pennsylvania. We cannot be in a situation where we're advocating for folks to work at a minimum wage. We've got to change that, and it's been far too long since there's been a change. We expect an aggressive push this year in that space, and hopefully we can get it done by June 30th at the latest. The governor, in his job creation in space, has added new dollars for job creation, but has also talked aggressively about doing a better job of aligning people to the jobs that are being created. Right now, we're training folks. And there's training, once folks graduated from job training, they're not necessarily moving directly into the jobs that are available. We have got to do a better job of this alignment of those jobs that we know are available. If a business or a nonprofit or, in fact, the government is hiring in ABCD spaces, we need to make sure that we're training folks to be able to fit those positions that we know may be available in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line. So the governor is proposing a major public-private sector entity to come into place that the Chamber of Commerce and the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO will kind of lead in terms of really dealing with the issue of alignment and making sure that from an aggressive standpoint, that when we know jobs are coming up, that we immediately have a pipeline directly to hire folks in that space. And that I think is hugely important because it clearly is necessary. Some of the requests that we're getting in our district office, of course, are employment requests and making sure that we align folks to those jobs that are coming out. The career centers are doing pretty good right now, but we know that we can do a much better job as we deal with this issue of aligning and making sure that everything is coming into space. The governor has proposed more dollars for early intervention, more dollars for our pre-K programs, $40 million for pre-K counts, $10 million for Head Start. As I said, the Community College Tuition Assistance Program is about an $8 million expenditure. The Military Family Education Program, the GI Bill for Pennsylvania vets and their families, that's about a $2.7 million expenditure. And everything else is relatively modest on top of that. The governor is proposing a $15 million contribution from the state to local counties, because local counties have to upgrade all of their election systems. That is absolutely necessary given the vulnerability that exists with the voting machines that exist in Pennsylvania. It's clear, it's necessary, it's something that has to get done, and we believe that the $15 million will be a good down payment. I'm going to suspect that many counties across the state of Pennsylvania become much more vocal about that issue because the cost for new machines, new election machines, tamper-proof machines, machines that you can authenticate your vote is much more than that. And so I'm pretty confident that there will be, or I'm hoping that there will be an increase in state expenditures to deal with supporting local counties in their pursuit of purchasing new voting machines. I told you about the alignment issue with our job workforce development program. We are adding new dollars in our agricultural space, major investments in agriculture, which is a good thing, especially urban agriculture is a $1 million new investment in urban agriculture. I'm looking through the rest of my notes, that is, in terms of the highlights of the governor's budget proposal, that's essentially it. The governor has asked for, and this is another important thing, the governor has asked for, once again, a modest increase in the shale tax and in the severance tax for natural gas drilling. Most folks know that as Marcellus Shale drilling. It's a relatively modest increase. As you all know, I have been extremely vocal about increasing the shale tax dramatically, especially since we've not had any severance tax on natural gas drilling ever. We're the only state in the nation that does not have a severance tax on natural gas drilling, which means we're subsidizing every other state around the nation because every other state is getting a benefit from the natural gas drilling in their state. We in Pennsylvania are not, so the gas goes into this international pipeline and just makes it easier for other folks all around the country. we're not getting the benefits from that. However, the governor's budget proposal is relatively modest. What he does want to do with this severance tax, this shale tax, we'll just call it a shale tax from now on. He wants to create a Restore Pennsylvania Infrastructure Fund, which would take that money from the shale tax and create a $4.5 billion infrastructure investment fund, which would drive dollars into all kinds of categories all across the state of Pennsylvania. It would do infrastructure investment around technology, infrastructure investment around green technology, infrastructure investments in urban communities, in the greening space, blight remediation, economic development tools, all kinds of things. And that is an interesting way, an interesting proposal to come out. We'll see if we can make that a more robust shale tax, because this office doesn't believe that the shale tax is strong enough at this moment, or the proposed shale tax is strong enough at this moment. And our fight will also be to make sure, if we go down this path, if the governor's choosing to go down this path of an infrastructure investment fund, that we make sure that those dollars get invested in urban communities like Philadelphia, and in suburban communities that may have water issues or runoff issues or things of that nature. So flooding issues, all kinds of things like that. So pay attention to that, the shale tax proposal and the infrastructure fund called Restore Pennsylvania that will be coming out of that will be in negotiations with the Republicans in the House and the Senate and the governor's office over the next several months on that proposal and on just about everything contained in the governor's budget proposal. So, Hugh, I think that's the quick and dirty rundown on the governor's budget proposal. It may be a good time to open up for questions. Governor is talking about just a couple other points that I think I want to throw in here. Governor's talking about lowering the age for mandatory education from 8 to 6 years of age. We're one of the few states in the nation that does not require our children to start school at 6 years of age. He's also talking about the high school dropout rates of ages from 17 to 18 years of age. In other words, trying to get more of our children in school longer, so that when they graduate in school earlier, so they can get that education that they need. Everybody knows there's a strong education on the front of life. Really is a solid foundation to be successful in the back end of life. And he's trying to keep kids and students in school a little bit longer so that they can, we don't lose anyone when they get to that junior or senior year in high school. We want to make sure that we give every one of our students a chance to pull themselves together, even though they may be struggling at the later end of the years in school, that we give them every chance to pull themselves together put them in a success category as opposed to in the category that may be a bit troubled. Hugh, I think that's probably the good, quick, and dirty on the governor's budget proposal. Just as a last point, the way the process worked, the governor, by constitution, put out his budget proposal on yesterday, beginning the week of February 11th. The Senate Appropriations Committee will have for 3 weeks straight, 4 days of every week, will be bringing in a significant number of the cabinet secretaries of each of the different departments to testify in front of the Senate Appropriations Committee to ask questions about potential areas of spending and try to get to the root of the reasons why money is being proposed in these various areas. So you'll be able to see that on through my website, senatorhughes.com. If you have time during the course of the day, to be able to watch. You'll be able to watch it through our website, SenatorHughes.com. We'll make sure that there's a link open up and available to anyone who may want to watch the proceedings. As you know, I'm the Democratic Chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, so I'll be kind of front and center just about all of those days running these hearings and asking the appropriate questions and trying to get the answers necessary to make sure that the programs that are being discussed by the administration are spot on, and to make sure that we are getting all that we need to get out of all of the expenditures. All right, we have a guest that's just, hey, you.
Yes, Senator.
We have a guest that's just walked into the room.
Okay.
I don't know what we're going to, this is the Senator Hughes Town Hall, but one of our council people has just walked into the room here in my office, maybe because he lives around the corner from my office. and that's City Councilman Curtis Jones Jr. Kind of moseyed around the corner, and I wanted to jump in on the call. So this is a surprise, Councilman.
How are you, Senator?
Good to talk to you. Say hello to about 1,000 or so of your constituents. All right, Councilman, say hello.
Hello, and I saw the lights on.
Okay.
Decided to stop, and here you are in the middle of a town hall meeting.
Yes, sir.
The service never ends for you, and I'm glad to see it. We work very closely together. State issues are related to city issues, which are related to federal issues. So all politics is local.
That's right. That's right. So a great surprise from the councilman. Why don't you just, Councilman, quick and dirty? What are the things you've been working on in city council real quick?
So as chair of public safety, I deal with police, prisons, courts, issues like that. So I like to say in a quick, we close jails and we open opportunities. We close the House of Correction. We reduce the census up on State Road from upwards of 9,000 down to below 7,000. And the reason that's important because that realizes a $12 million a year savings from the operation of that prison that we want to go to violence reduction. So if you can look at some of the issues germane to systemic violence, you talk about this all the time. I've never met a armed robber who made $50,000, and we want to try to get more young men and women at risk into the trades. We want them doing things with their hands other than hurting each other. And so we've worked with the state, and you've done a yo person's job of bringing resources back here. You look at 59th and Market, you see the skeleton of that building. That is a $50 million project you brought here, bro.
That's right. That's right.
And it's going to create or retain 300 jobs and 100 new jobs from the zip codes 39 and 5-1. So we're excited about the partnership. We're excited about creating opportunity and therefore taking away the incentive from people to commit crimes. So economic development and justice reform go hand in hand, Senator.
Well, what we've tried to do, and thanks, Councilman, what we've tried to do is have an effective working relationship with our city council members. Here in the city, we've got Curtis Jones Jr., Janie Blackwell, Councilwoman Janie Blackwell, City Council President Darrell Clark, as our council people representing the 7th Senatorial District. And we've tried to have an effective relationship, and one of those, the byproducts of that relationship is the major project that's being developed. As the councilman indicated, at 59th and Market Street.
Transformative.
It really is. It is transformative. It was great to have the governor show up at the groundbreaking. And we want to replicate those as much as possible. It really takes a great city-state relationship to make these things happen. And, you know, when we bring everyone together, the community first, and then the city, the state, and then, of course, our federal government partners, it really does come together nicely. We have that happening in Parkside, at a really wonderful development at 52nd Park Fat.
Yes.
That is that we did the ribbon cutting in the spring, the summer.
You did the Wynn Ballroom.
At the Wynn Ballroom, we worked on nicely for some of the folks on the call. They probably have fond memories of hanging out at the Wynn Ballroom. And several others in North Philadelphia, and also out in the suburbs. So that's the kind of partnership that it takes to make real transformative difference in the communities that we represent. Our responsibility at the state level is to drive more resources back into the city, and the councilman's job at the city level is to get those resources to the people. And so far, I think he's done a good job.
Okay.
Just walking around the neighborhood.
Listen, I saw the light for it, Senator. I'm going to check one.
Okay. Hey, you want to open up some of these calls here, man?
Oh, absolutely, Senator. But before I do, just a piece of housekeeping. For those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Hughes or if Councilman Jones is still sticking around, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we'll do a couple calls, and then we have a live poll question that the folks that have joined us can participate in, if you'd like. And then,
Don't we have a couple poll calls to do? We do.
We have a couple poll questions. We can move to the second one after we conclude the first one. The first one is, for those that have joined us, and the question is, do you support increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour in Pennsylvania? If you do, press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you do not, you can press 2. Again, the question is, do you support increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour in Pennsylvania? If you support that, press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you do not, you can press 2. And again, if you have a question for Senator Hughes tonight, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, the first question we're going to go to is Brenda in Winfield. Brenda, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Hi, Senator Hughes. How are you? Councilman Jones.
Hello.
What's up, Brenda?
Hi. Nothing much. I know you know a good friend of mine, Shawnee Newton, Zion Baptist
Church. Absolutely. Shawnee. Everybody knows Shawnee. Come on.
Yeah, everybody knows Shawnee. Yep. Well, my question is tonight, and for Councilman Jones, too. Linwood Savage is my son-in-law. But anyway, my grandson, Jeremy, he was jumped at 77th and Overbrook. He was coming out of school, and he was going to work. These four guys jumped him, took his coat, his shoes, his wallet, and jumped on him. And I just wanted to know if we could have more police officers patrolling the area. And my grandson, he is just so devastated, he doesn't even want to go back to work. Now, he's a senior at the Service Leadership Academy in Winfield.
Uh-huh.
And he took this little job. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And he took this little job so he could have extra money for his prom and help his mom and dad out with his senior year. And we got these thugs out here. They're going to jump the kids. So I was wondering if we could have more police patrol in the area, you know, to guard our children when they get out of school.
I think that's Brenda, thanks for the call, and I'm sorry to hear about that was your grandson, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your grandson. Make sure that you and he and the rest of the family stop by the office so we can, you know, spend a little time with him and, you know, encourage him to keep moving forward. He comes from a good family, so I know that's not a problem, but it always helps when you got a little extra encouragement. We can work with our local police, and I'll let Councilman jump in here in a minute. One of the things that the Councilman has done that we've worked with him on, but he's really taken a good leadership role on this, is the regular calls that he does with the principals. Every principal, he gets on a conference call, also with the local police, if I have that correctly, Councilman, and they discuss, all the principals discuss collectively about any issues that may be going on in their particular community or around their school, so that all the schools know what's happening, in case there, for example, may be a beef with between one school, one block of students at one school and another group of students at another school. And so there's a sharing of information. That is a low cost but extremely smart way, extremely smart and pioneering way to do a better job of making that connection between what's happening with our principals and our schools and the local police department. And I think the school principals have found it to be very effective, and the police have been very pleased with this ability to get out in front of potential issues. Councilman, you want to speak a little bit about that?
Yes. A couple of years ago, maybe five now, a young man was at Tustin Playground, and the reason why we take these kinds of situations so seriously, he was like other kids. He was in the schoolyard, and he was watching two other kids fight, Senator. And,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, we've done that in growing up. Ooh, fight, fight, fight. The fist
mm-hmm.
fight turned into gunfight, and they shot into a crowd and killed Bernard Scott.
Right.
Right in Tustin.
Yeah.
So it escalated beyond your normal neighborhood beef and went there. What was more disturbing was that when we did a search of the playground, we found five other weapons hidden in the playground because the kids were going into the school. Before they went to school, they hid their firearm. So what we did was created a network of cameras and called it the Safeguarder Program, so that during the time a young person goes and leaves school or comes to school, there is a connection to the real-time crime center down at on Oregon Avenue.
Right.
So that is also a part of that 7 a.m. conference call we do with all of the principals.
Mm-hmm.
And we started mapping the incidents of where these things happen. And the number one hotspot for young juveniles getting into a little bit of trouble was 52nd and Lancaster. And we were trying to figure out why, Senator. And what it was that is the hub where the 10 and the 52 meet. But
together.
More importantly than that, catching that bus there, that's their favorite pizza spot right on that corner.
Really?
Yes. And
yeah.
So all of them were gathering. So whether you were in Mastery, whether you were at KIPP, long story short, what we did was encourage the principals to dismiss at different times.
Right.
Five,
okay.
10 minutes one way or another can save people from running into rival schools. The second thing that we did was, from meeting with those principals, was to meet with the representatives of the 16th Police District and the 19th Police District. So they were aware of a robbery. You'd be surprised, people, you know, doing what they did to your grandson. And then we mapped it out and began to stage bike police and things like that so that at those major nodes to make sure that those things calm down. And you can't put a cop there every day,
right.
But you can
right.
put it up so that people, it's unpredictable. The final
right.
thing that we can do is join Town Watch.
Mm-hmm.
So Town Watch trains individuals
mm-hmm.
to be able to go out and be eyes and ears for the police. That does not mean
right.
tackling drug dealers or whatever it is, but it does mean
mm-hmm.
that you can call it in, report it, and help to the police to be a second set of eyes. So those are the things
okay.
we can do, and we put cameras up on Haverford Avenue just for that.
Yeah, there. And thanks, Brenda. Appreciate your call, and,
okay.
and bring the young man over to the office so we can say hi to him, and you know. Kind of be a bit of an encouragement to them, you know what I mean?
Okay, I will. Thank you so much. I appreciate everything with you gentlemen are doing, especially for us, and just keep on doing stuff for seniors, too.
Okay. You can't forget the seniors.
Don't forget the seniors, yes. Now, listen, I have one more question I would like to ask you.
Brenda, I got like 300 other questions on there.
Okay, I'll call another time. Thank you for your help.
Thank you.
All right. All right.
Just as an aside, I see the council mentioned cameras. I see one of the other callers was talking about cameras as well. And we created in Harrisburg in the last in last year's budget cycle, a brand new $60 million fund for community and school violence initiatives to quell community and school violence problems. We are looking at that new program, that new fund, and that was something that was driven out of our office. It's a brand new program. We're looking at that fund to be a vehicle to help address these kinds of community policing issues, so that it might augment the whole camera conversation. It might augment the other kinds of ideas or options that folks might want to utilize to make their communities and their schools safer. I hate to use the language community and school, because the truth of it is schools are in communities, but that's the technical language that it's called. It's a brand new fund, $60 million fund. We're pretty proud that we were able to put this in place. And it's housed at Pennsylvania Commissioner for Crime and Delinquency. Councilman, you may know about that organization.
Yeah, I'm on that.
All right.
Boy, I was never so proud when they are talking about this obscure senator from Philadelphia.
Obscure.
No, it's to them.
Uh-huh.
And then when they said the name, I wanted to jump out my seat and say, no, I know him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very proud of him.
That was us. That was us. Hey, Hugh?
Yes, Senator.
Hey, Hugh, I see Terry on the list, and I'm trying to acknowledge some of these folks who have similar issues. You don't have to pull Terry up on Aspen Avenue, but Terry, if you have an initiative that you want to try to get help on with respect to guns on the street, reach out to our office, my office, or Councilman Jones's office. We can help you with that. The idea, the new school, the new community anti-violence program that I just referred to is a vehicle to try to get communities extra help in that space. So I want to make sure that you're aware of that. You can reach out to my office. You can reach out to Councilman Jones's office. Councilman Jones, what's your office number?
215-686-3417. That's 215-686-3417.
And folks should also pay attention to what's going on in Washington, D.C. I believe the United States Congress on the House of Representatives on the House side have begun hearings on the issue of gun violence and trying to deal with some of the issues that over 90% of the American citizens are in support of, automatic background checks and things of that nature. And so folks should pay attention to that. And so hopefully we can move that through. Hugh, you want to pick out someone else for us?
Yeah, I think I'd like to go back to Kelly. This is a question, I think, for both you and Councilman Jones. Kelly, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and Councilman Jones.
Good evening, and Happy New Year to both of you.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Okay. My question is, Monday night there was a meeting about the wall at 46 and Hartford Avenue that run the whole wall that's been up over 100 years.
Taken
down. I was on a committee when Joan Williams for the West Philadelphia Coalition and Lee Tolliver.
Uh-huh.
And we had beat before that a wall would not be taken down because of being historical and the way that the wall is set to divide our street, Christina Place. We already had a juvenile justice center over there on the corner of 48th and Hartford Avenue. Why would they want to take part of that wall to make a driveway to drive through from Hartford Avenue all the way over to Market Street where the insurance building is at? We really have an issue with that. Is there any way that you guys can help us?
Yeah, Kelly, if you could do me a favor, Kelly, if you could, that's in Councilwoman Blackwell's district, all right?
Yes.
Councilman Jones. That's Councilwoman Blackwell's district. If you could call my director of constituent service is Tiffany Wilson, tomorrow at 215-879-7777, 215-879-7777. Just talk to her directly and get the details on that. We'll check on that. That wall does have some history to it. There is some, if I remember correctly, that used to be where my old district office was
right,
for 17 years.
Yes.
There was some As we look at the revitalization of that block at 46 in Haverford to 46 in Market Street to 48th Street, the issue of trying to get more passage through that very long square block was something that I think has been discussed for a while. But I need to hear more about the community meeting that occurred and some of your thoughts. So please give Tiffany Wilson a call at 215-879-7777. Thank you, Kelly.
Okay. Have a good one.
You do the same now. Hugh, who else you got for us?
I think, Senator, we're going to go down. We mentioned when you were going through the different issues, the minimum wage. We've received a couple calls about the minimum wage. I think I'd like to bring those on right now. Go to Lucille in Winfield. Lucille, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and Councilman Jones.
Good evening, Senator Hughes.
Hey, Lucille. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Wonderful.
I am really concerned about this this wage increase. $15 won't be until 2025. Is that correct?
That's what the governor's proposal is.
Okay, so I, what the governor is saying is the governor can't even live off this type of money. The people already now are way beyond minimum wage already, and even if they get this increase, they still won't be able to catch up. Rent is so high, food is so high, so how do they expect people to live on this $15 an hour or $12 an hour? I think this is really upsetting. And it, you know what? It's really disgusting that he won't even put something out like this. Now, if they was giving him this type of money, he wouldn't want it.
Well, I think you know, we've been talking about, we were very involved in the minimum wage increase back in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of pushback from a lot of folks who didn't want to raise it at all. In fact, there were some people, believe it or not, Lucille, who wanted to cut the minimum wage, who wanted to eliminate the whole idea of having a minimum wage to pay people. And their whole idea was to, in fact, drive wages down. So I think the governor's proposal, believe it or not, is somewhat modest because it's taking time to get. It's taking from now, 2019 to 2025, to get to $15 an hour. And he does put a cost of living adjustment on top of it. So there'll be an increase every year connected to the cost of living going up. I think there's some folks who would rather see that $15 an hour go into place much quicker, much quicker. I know that the city of Philadelphia has adopted for city contractors, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we took an initiative, and it kind of started with former Councilman Wilson Good, taking a look at the contracts that the city of Philadelphia had control over. So we took that initiative and started with the airport, where, as you know, Senator, a lot of the people that worked as baggage handlers and people who pushed people in a wheelchair were working literally for tips. And so we went out there and we shut it down.
4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
4 o'clock
in the morning. I remember.
And that resulted over time with a raise from $7 to $12.50 for 3,000 people. So, you know, so then we had to fight to make sure that that was reflected in those entities that had collective bargaining agreements. Mm-hmm. So as we push the needle in the right direction, there are going to be people that push it back in the other direction.
Right.
And to the degree that, you know, we're getting heat now, I'm not going to do my politicking right now,
right,
but there are groups that have organized to come after, keep in mind, the champion of the minimum wage increase was Wilson Good. They got him unelected.
Yeah.
So now they've picked a slate of folk that they want to get unelected because they don't want these kinds of progressive moves. So now the point that you're making, though, is true. The average rent in the city of Philadelphia is now $1,100 a month.
Wow.
Yes.
So it takes two or three people to live together,
mm-hmm,
just to be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to spend more than a quarter, I believe it is, of your monthly salary on rent.
Yeah.
So, but more than likely, people are spending one check on rent and the other check on everything else,
mm-hmm,
from food to utilities clothing, mm-hmm. to transportation, and God forbid, mm-hmm. you want to take your child to the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at that as a constant battle. And you're right, and your perceptions are right. I went out to Seattle, Senator, and people making $15 an hour could not afford to live in the city proper.
Yep.
They lived.
Yep.
These are the people mm-hmm. that worked in the restaurants and the hotels, had to live an hour outside of Seattle proper and live 3 and 4 in an apartment.
I just attended a conference. Thanks, Lucille, for calling us up. We'll keep you posted. Stay close to my website, SenatorHughes.com, because there will be a lot of information on that. We need the folks to be advocates for this issue. Just to piggyback on that comment, Councilman, I was at a conference of legislators from all over the country this past weekend, and one of them from California raised the fact, and he represents Silicon Valley, okay? And he said that he could barely find a place in his own legislative district, okay, to live in. Now he's a state representative in the state of California, and can't afford a place in his own district to live in. Exactly. So this is this problem we have with respect to housing is a national problem. It's not just a Philly problem or a Pennsylvania problem. It's a national problem. I applaud City Council for making a very dramatic increase in housing program dollars in the city of Philadelphia in this last year. Hopefully we can match that at the state level and really drive all kinds of new options and new resources for housing. And as we always do, and at least in the 2 years that the Orange Man is in the White House, you know who I'm talking about. I said it. I'm not apologizing for it. He has cut, his housing secretary has cut and is proposing to cut by billions of dollars what's available for housing programs all across the country. So we got a big fight.
Context on that, Senator, when I first started, and this is 15 years ago, our housing allotment was $64 million from CDBG dollars.
Community Development Block Grant.
We are now at $36 million in today's dollars.
Right.
That's half.
And that's the number one problem that we have in all of our offices, and I know I can speak for this for the councilman, is the issue of housing, whether it be foreclosure issues, whether it be just can't find a place, whether it be homelessness or what have you. It is the number one problem, and we're not getting any help from the federal government. We have a good team with the state and with the city of Philadelphia to try to drive new programs and expand resources. But I just say this, folks, voting matters. And anyone and everyone on this call, all the hundreds of thousands of people so waiting on this call, everybody's got to be registered to vote. Everybody's got to be registered to vote. If you're not registered, I mean, what's the point? All right, you're not doing your civic duty. So that's that. Hugh, who else do we have?
Senator, we got a couple calls coming in about money to clean up the neighborhood. So I'm going to go to Linda in West Philly. Linda, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and Councilman Jones.
What's up, Linda?
Yes. Hi. How you doing, Senator Hughes?
Doing real good. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm one of the city workers that retired.
Okay.
But we used to work for the street department. That's why I'm very interested in trying to figure out what's going on in for the neighborhood, because I've been around here 40 years, and I'm trying to see whether I should move, or because I'm here, I'm 67 this year, and I'm trying to figure out should I move or just stay and wait till the neighborhood come up. But I might not even be able to see it if it's going to take 20 years or 10 years. And I'm really concerned about the streets being clean and new pavements and trees, and the neighborhood would change. Because people is coming into the neighborhood for the worse, not for the better. That's the reason why it's so trashy out here now.
Go ahead.
I never seen it so trashy in all my life since I've been around here for 40 years, and it's getting worse. I see a lot of people coming.
What general area do you live in, Linda?
I'm between Drott Avenue and Parris Street. My home is between Westminster of 50th and Parris.
Okay, so that's the 44th ward, 50th Parish Westminister. What we would have to pull up two things, all right? So we'd have to pull up what the planning program has for that particular area. Again, Councilman, that's not your district. That's Councilwoman Blackwell's district, if I remember my lines correctly, and find out exactly what the plans are. There is some interest in trying to really invest in that community,
yes.
But make sure that the community investment is community oriented, so that you don't get driven out of your home and out of your neighborhood. All right,
okay.
And that is fundamental. We can't have investment where it's happening too much. Where the investment is pricing people out of the communities that they've lived in for 20, 30, 40 years, like yourself. But we want to do more. That's that Market L. You know that's 52nd.
Fifty-second and Market.
Yep, that's all of that transportation stuff going on over there. But we really gotta look hard and try to see what we can get done in that space to make sure that you benefit. I would suggest don't think about moving. Hold on, okay? Hold on and stay much closer connected to our office so that we can work with you and the folks in that neighborhood. If I remember correctly, Councilman, I'm looking at my visuals in my brain right here, not at the wall, my brain. I think that's the Mill Creek Recreation Center is in that
right.
neighborhood.
Right, yes.
Okay.
It's the Mill Creek area, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that there may be some, I'm going to speculate, that's not your district, so I'm not going to hold you to it, Councilman, but I'm going to guess that there's probably some dollars coming to revitalize that rec center.
So, through the rebuild process, I can't speak for a councilwoman, Blackwell, but I'm pretty sure she's targeted that rec center as one of her priorities. But I can also tell you that when we look at the city as a whole, Senator, and we start to say, and you're not a prophet, but you've been prophetic in
you.
A sense.
Thank you.
That when it comes to what is the city's affordable housing strategy, and you then try to complete that sentence, it's a little discombobulated and not real clear. So what we need to have is a program. One of them is PHDC that does major systems repair for people that want to stabilize and stay in their homes. So I agree with you, Senator, she should not move.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that has to happen is we have to get some young people to start to look at these areas to move back in. And what I discovered, and I have a daughter that almost gave me a heart attack when she said, "Hey, Dad, you know, thank you for getting me through college, and now I'm going to go move to Delaware." I said, "No, you're not." Right?
At least she didn't come to move back home.
Yeah. Well, she actually did that for a while, but that's a story for another day. But the point is, more of our young people who want to raise families can't afford the 20 to 40% down that is required.
Yes.
So what we are looking at, and you're hearing it first on Senator Houston's town hall, is I want to explore the notion that we come up with a real legitimate, actually filing a lease purchase option.
Okay.
And for real lease purchase, not one of those fly-by-night, you pay your rent, and I tell you, you were late two times and you forfeited your money. But something that we can register with the city, not quite as strong as a deed, but close,
mm-hmm.
and be able to say that in 5 years, if you can stay on pace, fix your credit, this much of your rent will be applied for your down payment and closing.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to move young families,
yep.
working families, into ownership
yep.
instead of being in renter's hell.
There you go. Thank you, Councilman. Linda, hang in there, all right? Hang in there. Connect with our office, Tiffany Wilson, 215-879-7777, and also call Councilwoman Blackwell's office as well. She's very responsive, savvy, veteran city council person. She knows all the nooks and crannies, and I got to believe that that Mill Creek Recreation Center is probably on a list to get addressed through the rebuild program. Hugh, who's next?
Well, I wanted to thank Linda for that call, and just a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Hughes or Councilman Jones this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad. And again, if you want to participate in the live poll question, it is the question tonight is, do you support increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour? If you do, you can press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you do not, you can press 2. There's overwhelming numbers on that. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Alan in Wynwood. Alan, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Senator,
Alan, are you there?
I am there.
Alan, what's going on, Alan? How you doing this evening?
Senator, thanks for granting me access.
Well, kid, you're talking to 1,000 people. What's your question today, Alan?
Senator, Councilman, always good to talk to you both. I want to shift things a little bit to the governor's budget address yesterday, Senator. And you said it, voting matters. We've learned that a number of times. Certainly learned it in 2016. The governor last year decreed that that counties replace their voting equipment.
Yep.
Philadelphia, as councilman probably knows, is in the midst of doing that now. Yet I think there was only $15 million in the governor's budget for counties around the state.
Yes.
Is there any chance that gets negotiated upwards?
That's the hope, Alan. We had met with the Department of State. This is February. We met with the Department of State before Christmas, if I remember my timing correctly, about this whole issue, about trying to gain additional resources. We're going to propose that we at least get to 50% of the total cost, that the state match 50% of the total cost for the local county. And that would probably get us to a figure, I'm going to speculate, probably closer to $50 million, not $15 million, closer to $50 million to take the pressure off of local counties to deal with changing their voter equipment. We are going to need the pressure of our county execs and our county commissioners to really step up and speak out on this issue and advocate their senators and their legislators about why additional state support is necessary. You know, as you know, Alan, and everyone on the call, you know, budgets are negotiated documents. The governor has his priorities, and he sets those priorities, and he sets dollar figures to those priorities. But in a co-equal branch of government, the legislature has its perspective as well. And you know, sometimes we have a very good relationship with this governor. It's been one of the better governors that we've had in a long time. But we're not necessarily in agreement on 100% of stuff, all right? In this space, and we've done a lot of work in this space, not just around the state but around the country on voting and voter security, and especially voter suppression issues. We believe that the state has a vested interest in creating a secure election system that everybody can believe in. It is the foundation of our democracy. It, you know, in the last election, and I don't need to tell you, Alan, but in the last election, there were concerns in Texas that you went in and voted for one person, your vote was getting recorded for someone else. In Georgia, the voter registration forms, I think the number was 53,000 voter registration forms were held at the Department of State's office in Georgia and weren't processed. It was found out that I think 80% of those registration, voter registration forms were Democrat, or excuse me, 80% of those forms were black and were from black and brown communities in the state of Georgia. So, and of course, everyone knows about the whole Russian hacking situation, which is real and needs to be taken a lot more seriously than China as well. Needs it to be taken a lot more seriously. So we have got to upgrade our systems, make it 21st century, not 19th century. Make the technology work, make it auditable, all right, so that you can audit it and make sure that, you know, have a paper trail attached to it so that who you voted for, there's a level of integrity in this process. So, Councilman, you want to jump in real quick?
Yeah, just one other thing. I don't want to forget this important part. David P. Richardson, former state representative, said that voter education is also a part of it. You can have the infrastructure and the machines. Giving a person a voter registration card without voter education is like giving the keys to the car to somebody who doesn't have a driver's license.
Exactly.
So we have to balance that out with the reason why you should vote. And everything that in your life is impacted somehow by an elected official's policy and or appointed official's policy. So we have to be very careful who we let in office and who gets the keys to those cars.
Absolutely. And you got to be registered to vote. There will be a voter reform package talked in greater detail. Driven by our office and also supported by the governor's office around all kinds of voter reform measures, automatic voter registration, pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, changing the hours during the course of the day that polling places are open, things like that. And our caucus, the Senate Democratic Caucus, will be advancing a package of bills. And so, just as has been done in Washington, D.C., when the Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats took over the Congress, one of the first packages of legislation was voter reform stuff. It's necessary. It's important. It's timely. If we can do everything else with the blink of an eye, especially purchase stuff, we certainly can purchase our democracy with having a really strong and 21st century voting system. So, Alan, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate the call.
All right. Thanks, Senator. Thanks, Councilman.
All right.
Alan, thank you very much for the call, Senator. We're going to go back to the callers.
We've got probably about five more minutes left. We're running over.
Okay, right.
I'm going to just what. Someone asked a question. One of the ways that people can be helpful with all of this stuff is you got to get active. You got to get involved. You know, we've been making some progress, but it's not the kind of progress that matches the need. I'm old school councilman. I'm for a new deal. All right. I'm for a brand new doggone deal. I would use another word, but we got young people on the call. We need a new deal when it comes to the minimum wage. We need a new deal when it comes to college. We need a new deal when it comes to housing. We need a new deal when it comes to jobs and transportation. We need a new deal when it comes to pay equity. We need a new deal across the board. And we've got to be in the business of advocating for that. Too long, too many times, in too many circumstances, we think we can only get a little bit so that we wind up only advocating for a little bit, all right? And we got to be in that we got to stop being in the business of low aim, okay? When you have low aim, you achieve low results, all right? When you have high aim, then you have a chance to achieve high results, okay? And all I know is this. We're long past incremental. We're long past incremental, councilman, okay? We are now must be in the business of establishing a new high order and a new deal for the people in this state, the people in the city, and doggone it, I almost said it, doggone it, the people in the 7th Senatorial District. But I can't do it. We can't do it if people sit on the sidelines. They got to get up, get into it, get involved, do what we know is right, respond to the things that we know are necessary. There should be no child in the 7th Senatorial District that is not reading on grade level by the 4th grade, okay? We know how to do that. We know what to do. Our Read to Succeed program has proved that, all right? There should be more money for students to go to college, all right? And we know what happens when a child goes to college, or we know what happens when a child accesses a technology program or a apprenticeship program, and how that can change their circumstances overnight. You know, you get a good apprentice program, 6 months, 9 months, you're through, you're a skilled carpenter, you're a skilled plumber, you're a skilled electrician, and next thing you know, the world is yours, all right, because you can achieve and do so many things. But if we have low aim, if we don't put the pressure on, okay, then we won't get what it is that we need. So it's all about a new deal. And I don't mean to be preaching nor proselytizing, all right? But as we wind up, my message to everybody on this call, my message to everybody in the 7th Senatorial District is to demand at the level of what we need to respond to the issues in our families and in our communities, in our neighborhoods, and across the state. Demand a new deal for people. Demand a new deal for this district. Demand a new deal for the city and for the state of Pennsylvania. And for this nation, while you demand it, all right? And make sure you vote like you got. When is Election Day, Councilman?
May 21st.
Okay, May 21st. That's the next big election for folks in the 190th legislative district that is wholly in my senatorial district. There's an election day in March for that race. Let's see.
Special election. Still Vanessa Brown's unexpired term.
And what date is that, Councilman? Do you remember? That March 12th. Thanks to Tiffany Wilson for knowing that. I didn't even have to ask you for that. Okay.
No,
all right. Okay. But people have got to get involved. Finally, this, because we're kind of closing out everything. If you have any questions that you didn't get a chance to call us up and talk to us, call us at our office, 215-879-7777. Sadil Love, Sadil White, all right? We're going to deal with that issue with Abolition Hall. I promise you, we're going to deal with that issue in Abolition Hall. I know that's on your mind, and I want to make sure that we reached out to you. Look for a call from Tiffany Wilson from my office tomorrow. She will call you by noon tomorrow, won't you, Tiffany? Tiffany said yes. She's going to call Fidel by noon tomorrow about Abolition Hall. All right? Hugh, we're about done there, man.
Okay. Well, thank you for participating. Thank you to Councilman Jones for his guest appearance tonight and for
surprise
all
surprise guest appearance.
I was just in the neighborhood.
Hey, Hugh, last time we had the Attorney General on, Josh Shapiro, that was
right.
Organized.
Right.
He just walked, he's around the corner.
Oh, well.
What are you going to do, Hugh?
Well, that all worked out, Senator. You have to keep your lights on more there, so you'll be okay. Well, thank you to everybody who participated in Senator Hughes' live telephone town hall. You've been a wonderful audience. Have a very nice evening.
Thank you.